This is the 007 Debriefings. I'm Intelligence Officer Wiz.
And I'm Weapons Specialist Zero.
Zero, how you doing this week?
A little tired.
Yeah, you seem to be that way a lot now, huh? Things picking up?
Yeah. Things are picking up. Just a client wasn't delivering all the stuff that we needed to do our work, and they finally delivered today, and it was just like, thank fucking Christ.
Yeah. It's nice to see that your arms dealership is actually working out on the side. I actually am very appreciative of that. So we are here to comb the files of MI6 to go over the cinematic adventures of one James Bond. This week, Moonraker. Zero, this is a weird movie for a number of reasons. But I think the first thing that we should probably discuss before we get into a review, essentially why this was made. Apparently, For Your Eyes Only was supposed to be the next movie, but because Star Wars made it so big in 77, they pivoted to Moonraker.
Yeah, it was just such a weird time. Just this sci-fi epic just comes out in the 70s, and just it just becomes like this crazy gold rush of, oh my god, we gotta go sci-fi. Sci-fi's the hottest shit right now. Go.
That really shows how much money and how popular Star Wars was at the time, because I think it stayed in the theaters for a very long time before it actually went into to video at a certain point. So that's probably why they thought, oh my god, we gotta go sci-fi in this. Which we'll get into exactly how that turned out. So why don't we get into our mission objectives? And this is where we go through every part of the 007 experience to go over specific elements. And we're going to start with 007, which is James Bond, played by Roger Moore.
His performance, it's good. I mean, it's not bad or it's not excellent or anything. I think this time around, his humorous one-liners after something happened, they're a little bit more clever. So, I mean, the timing feels like it's better.
I think this is Moore's best performance as Bond. But it's weird because it's because of addition by subtraction. You mentioned this comedic side. I think the action parts are good. I think he is still as charming and suave as ever. But the one thing they did not show in this movie, which I think was for his benefit, was that threatening lethal side. In fact, a lot of times he's being one-upped in this movie. I think this is actually an improvement when it comes to Moore in this role. And I think if they continue this method of, let's just not show that side anymore and just stick with what Moore works well with, I think that's going to work better as movies go on. It's kind of a backhanded compliment that the best version of Bond is one where they take away stuff from him. But that's kind of how I feel about this.
There's a reason why there's that axiom of sometimes less is more. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. Just Moore's performance in this movie just feels better because by taking away some of the things that made his role as Bond a little bit on the weak side, they end up enhancing some of the stronger traits that he's got as a Bond character and everything.
So we're getting to villains, and the first one we're going to start with is Hugo Drax, played by Michael Lonsdale.
I felt Drax had sort of the cartoonish supervillain sort of vibe again. Seems to be sort of a running theme with some of the Bond movies. But also, he's kind of excellent as well, too, in a sense, because just he constantly pushes back on Bond with kind of always having the drop on him or having the advantage over him. Like, I see you're trying to be cute there, Bond. Well, guess what? I'm two steps ahead of you. Sort of just kind of tilting Bond off of thinking that everything is rolling just to plan. For a good amount of the movie, it just feels like Drax kind of gets one up over him and everything. So it definitely feels like he's pretty good as Drax, but at the same time, this is more than likely a directional thing, but Drax does have the cartoonish supervillain sort of quality to him. I guess this is the era of cartoonish supervillain Bond villains.
Yeah. I agree with the fact that he's very cartoonish. He's very megalomaniac-like in this film. I also think he's pretty boring, and it's mainly because he just sticks to that template. I do find it interesting that he uses political connections to one-up Bond, which I don't think any other of the villains did in these series of movies, which it could have been an interesting direction to go into. But then again, that would probably be a little more boring for, let's say, a more standard audience. The thing that I found odd is that he has a lot in common with Dr. Kananga in Live and Let Die, in that I think he's meant to be more calculating and an intelligent villain, but the film does a disservice by making him the villain right away. I would have liked it if they would have said, this multi-billionaire has done this for the government, it got stolen and they don't know what's going on and he's pissed and the government's getting pressure from both sides to find this out. And then it's revealed towards the end, Drax did it all along. I thought that would have been a little more interesting, but they show right away that he is clearly the villain and that he was the one that instrumented this entire thing. The other thing, I kind of like the villainous plan towards the end. I don't know. Like, I like it in its silliness, but that's about it.
His whole Noah's Ark Master Race, a supervillain plan, it's very cartoonish. It's just like, haha, I'm going to wipe the planet clean, and then I'm going to repopulate with my race of supremely effective human beings. They're perfect specimens. It's just got, like, cartoonish mad scientist vibes, like, especially when he finally reveals his, like, master plan.
Yeah.
he just kind of goes, like, full cartoonish supervillain about it, kind of just gloating that his plan is perfect, no one can interrupt his plan. He really lays into it, and I mean, if you're kind of into the cartoonish supervillainy, I mean, it's not bad, but at the same time, it's just like, it is a little bit silly.
So let's get into Jaws, played by Richard Kiel.
Jaws, as usual, fantastic. A little bit goofy. I did find it interesting that towards the end, they did give Jaws a little bit of a heart, especially when Drax ends up going off on his whole, I'm going to make a perfect world and there will only be a place for perfect human beings to be here. And of course, Jaws' girlfriend is a little bit on the short side. Jaws himself is a little bit on the tall side, not quite the ideal that Drax has. And it just sort of clicks in his head. He's like, oh shit, I'm not considered a perfect specimen. How soon before he throws me and my girlfriend into the airlock and flushes us out to space? And then just, boom, just Jaws becomes kind of like a sudden good guy. It's kind of an interesting sort of character development sort of saga for him, albeit a short one, but I thought it was kind of neat. I thought Richard Kiel was pretty good as Jaws. It wasn't anything like excellent or terrible. It's just kind of good.
Yeah. I think Jaws is the better villain in this movie, to be completely honest. I do find the about face to be a little interesting, but the one thing that it showed as well that kind of annoyed me in the end is Jaws can talk.
Yes.
Which I'm like, wait a minute, he can talk? What the hell? Like, this could have been so much better if the guy can talk, and he has a decent voice too, unless that's somebody else's voice, and maybe in real life he couldn't really understand Richard Kiel. If you just made the thing that he can talk, why not let him talk? Make him goofy or make him whatever. It could have worked. But I guess as a goofball villain, he's perfectly fine. I find myself more disappointed by him than anything else. But I think he's the better villain of the two, which I think is kind of sad. All right, Zero, Bond Girl. Dr. Holly Goodhead, played by Lois Childs.
I thought she was a fun Bond girl, especially since she's a bit of an intellectual and she can push back and everything. I quite liked her for that sort of quality. As far as just Bond girl, she's not much of a fighter. That much is kind of obvious, but she didn't feel like she was in the movie too much. They peppered her in every once in a while.
Well, she's in it more than, let's say, Aki from You Only Live Twice and Honey Rider and Dr. No. So I think she's a little more prominent than that.
Yeah.
I think she's one of the worst Bond girls thus far. I think she's terrible. And not because of the character. I like the character. The character, like you said, is someone who is probably intellectually equal or even superior to Bond and does get the one-up on him at certain points. My issue is the actress, which is Lois Child. I swear to God, either this is because of the poor direction of the film or that she's just not that talented. But she has next to no emotion in this movie. There's a consistent tone throughout the entire film that she has where you cannot tell what she's supposed to feel. Because she sounds like this all the time.
That is a very fair point.
We're in danger, Bond. I am so angry at you, Bond. Like, oh my God, lady, a little bit of emotion, please. Thank you.
Yeah, she definitely seemed a bit dry on the emotional front. So.
Dry? Oh my God, dude, like the Sahara. Holy shit.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, dry is putting it nicely, but yeah, just if you had to put dry as a quality, yeah, she's a bit kind of Saharan as far as the emotional department goes.
Let's put it to you this way, okay? Jaws' girlfriend, who has no lines, and all she does is smile, shows more emotion than this woman does in this movie. And I'm sitting here going, oh my God, is she going to do it? And even in the end, when they're sleeping together, same exact face. Oh my God.
Yeah, she was a bit of a dead fish towards that end.
The character itself is fine. I think if it was a better actress there, it would have done a lot better. But a huge miss for this one. I did not like her at all. I thought she was incredibly boring. And it shouldn't have been. She should have been a very interesting character, much like the character that we dealt with in the last movie we watched. Because they're kind of the same thing. They're kind of competitive, but they're also together. There's a little push and pull. But whereas Barbara Bach did a fantastic job with her character in that movie, she does a terrible job in this movie. So I thought she was terrible in this movie. Huge miss for me. Spy action.
So spy action, mostly this one is all right, but when you get to the end, you can tell they were just trying to cram in as much sci-fi and special effects as they could, especially like the big scene with NASA's like military unit trying to take on Drax's unit. It's just like a laser light show everywhere, and you're just like, oh, so this is where most of the budget for the special effects went. All right, I get it.
So it's Thunderball in space, I see. The first three-fourths of the film isn't that bad, but
yeah.
There's not a lot of action. There's some fist fights and some boat chase sequences, which are not bad. But what I liked about it was more about gathering intel and spycraft more than it really was about anything else, which I thought was all right. That's pretty decent. But for that all to work, the final fourth of the film has to work, and it doesn't. And it's because of what you just said. Because of the laser light show and all the sci-fi elements that made it a little ridiculous at the end of the movie. I'm kind of two ways on this. I don't know if they could have went more campy and just went a little more ridiculous, and then probably would have been like, it's the less serious Bond, whatever. Or if they probably made it a little more serious in a way and maybe not made it in the space. A lot of it just seems a really silly in the end. And it just didn't really fit for the rest of the film, I think, or for even the rest of the series.
Pretty much just it goes from like pretty standard Bond movie with your fist fights, your vehicle chases and whatever. And then just right when you get into the space sequence, it just goes from like 3 to 11, just right on the turn of a dime. And you're just like, oh, we've got a big old space battle scene with lots of laser light show special effects. We've got laser blasters being used in the space station. It gets a little bit ridiculous. If you're into sort of like the cartoonish supervillain shenanigans, I guess it kind of works because Drax is kind of over the top with his whole I will make the perfect human race sort of bit that he's got. Maybe it kind of works out, but I think much like you said, just it sort of just goes from like 3 to 11 just right away, just with the action stuff. The spycraft stuff ain't too bad. It's kind of neat seeing Bond use some of the tools that he's got to his disposal in interesting ways. I kind of like the explosive dart launcher and him using that in a clever way to get out of the malfunctioning G-simulator device that he was strapped into and everything.
Yeah.
So lots of clever uses of some of the gadgets. It's not in like a completely corny way either, because I know some people are probably going to be a little mad at me for saying this, but some of the Pierce Brosnan movies, some of the Q gadgets that he gets to use, they end up kind of being like a Deus Ex Machina escape out of jail card. Instead of, you know, just going and, ah, shit, how do I get out of this situation? Shit. Oh, man, I'm going to have to get clever. And that's what this sort of had feeling of. It was just when he had to use some of the gadgets in sort of a non-standard way, Bond seems very clever about it. That's kind of how I feel overall with the spy action stuff.
So let's get into theme song and opening credits. The song is Moonraker, composed by John Barry and Hal David, performed by Shirley Bassey.
Thought the Bond song was okay. It's a little better, but not by much, from the previous film. It's kind of hard to top Live and Let Die from Paul and Linda McCartney. That's going to be a hard one to top for a while, unfortunately. Yeah.
Or if you compare it to Bassey's other songs, Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
This felt like, the way I put it in my review, is it felt like a standby. Like where they had something they wanted, they couldn't get it, so, well, here's this, so let's go. Both the opening credits and theme song kind of felt like, this is good enough. Which, okay, fine. Yeah, it's fine. Compared to, like you said, Live and Let Die, Diamonds Are Forever, Goldfinger. Yeah, it leaves a lot to be desired. Okay, Zero, so we're going to get into our conclusion. So why don't you go ahead with your conclusion?
I will say mission accomplished, but by a very thin margin. Mostly because I feel most of the movie's okay. Unfortunately, the performance of Lois Childs as Holly Goodhead is a little bit too dry. She just does not have the emotional range to sort of just fulfill the role in a successful way. Hugo Drax, he's an alright villain, a little bit cartoonish and supervillainy. Richard Clay as Jaws is fantastic in the fact that just he sort of has a good character arc sort of towards the end, which was something I had completely forgotten about. Most of the film's pretty good as far as the action sequences go, but I think really things kind of go completely off the rails when you get into the space station bit, and it just seems like, hey, how do we sci-fi this up real hard and real fast in a hurry? Lasers, just all the lasers, and you've got the incredibly flashy scene where NASA's got their space army fighting off Drax's guys, and you've got lasers blasting everywhere, people being thrown into space and stuff like that, and then, of course, you've got the fighting in the space station and everything, and yeah, you've got laser blasters kind of blowing up things here and there. It's just kind of one of those things that it just kind of ramps up and changes so fast. It almost just seems the last quarter of the movie almost feels like it's shoehorned in. That's why I feel it's kind of a barely a mission accomplished.
So you enjoyed it enough to just be like, oh, that was a fun afternoon. But other than that, nothing special.
Okay. Nothing special, and I think mostly it's unfortunately due to just Lois Childs being a bit too dry for a Bond girl, and then just the final quarter of the movie just going completely hard sci-fi from kind of a spy thriller movie.
So this is a complete mission failure for me. I was enjoying parts of the film. I don't think it's a terrible film, but the problems the film have, there's so much of them that it's kind of hard for me to recommend it. And it's funny, one of the only things that I kind of liked about the film was Roger Moore, and only because they took stuff out. But that, I think, is a good thing. I think that they start realizing that, okay, he's not good at this, so let's just massage that out of there, and let's just keep it going from there. And if they do that, great, I think that's better off. You talked about Lois Childs. I think she was terrible as the Bond girl. I think the Bond girl as a concept that they had here was a very good idea, but they wasted a perfectly good name on this actress, which it was like, oh, God. Like, I hear Holly Goodhead, and I'm like, you remember me from last week? Oh, my God, I'm so excited. Holly Goodhead? This is great.
I wish that Lois Childs had a little bit more of an emotional range, because she could have been as fun as, like, Pussy Galore, in my opinion.
Pussy Galore was so fun.
Yes! Oh my God!
She was so fun. I think the main villain was also pretty much a copy-paste of the other megalomaniacal... My God. The other cartoonish villains on the Bond canon, leaving really Jaws as the more interesting of the two, which Jaws doesn't talk, so that's kind of bad. I think you mentioned it too, the final fourth of the film where they had it in space. I wasn't feeling that either. I felt it was kind of off for the rest of the film. So yeah, this is a mission failure for me. I'm a little surprised that you are giving it a mission accomplished, but I guess if you enjoy the elements that is going on, well, you liked the main villain, correct?
I thought he was a little bit silly, but I thought he was okay.
Okay.
I think he's good, but yeah. I mean, I don't think he's like terrible or excellent. It's just kind of good.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this as well on the last review. What I'm starting to notice with these Bond films is that there are just different styles and tastes of Bond films, where I thought they do the same thing over and over for 25 films, and then I'm left puzzled going, how did this last so long? But clearly that isn't the case, because this isn't going to be a more campy, kind of funny, kind of goofy kind of Bond film, which there are fans of, which people like, which, great, I think that's a great thing. Again, mission failure on my part. I was pretty disappointed by it and kind of dumbfounded on some of the decisions that it made. And you are a mission accomplished?
Yeah, but by a very, very thin margin.
Okay, so me and Zero are split. Very thin mission accomplished for Zero. Mission failure on my part. Now, if you want my full review on this movie, you can go to my website at iamthewiz.com. You'll have my full written review right on the site, along with a link to the video that has this review that you've just listened to. Okay, Zero, so next week, we're going to go to the next film that is on the Bond filmography. So what is coming up next week?
It is 1981's For Your Eyes Only.
All right, For Your Eyes Only. Do you even remember For Your Eyes Only?
It's been a very long time.
Okay. Wait, this is the one where M is not in it anymore, right? Because the actor who played M died before this was made?
Unfortunately, he ended up having to be hospitalized after Moonraker because his stomach cancer apparently got worse. And unfortunately, when that happened, soon afterwards, he ended up passing away right before they started doing actual filming for Your Eyes Only.
I liked him as M. I liked also how his demeanor changes each different Bond. Like with, it seemed like with Connery, he was a little more chummy. With Lazenby, he was like, yeah, okay, sure. But he actively has disdain for more. He just seems like, oh, you fucking moron.
But, he's definitely got a vibe of, I'm sick of your shenanigans. Just keep your head on the job, man.
Now, I'm used to Judi Dench as M. So if I'm going to compare, like, Bernard Lee to Judi Dench, I like Dench a little bit more. But Lee has got some good strengths to him, too, that I actually really like. And I think he fits really well with the type of Bonds that he's in. So I don't necessarily think he's just like, oh, he just doesn't compare. I think they're both great, but I like Dench a little more.
Dench is the one that I have a lot of familiarity with, mostly because I think right when she started appearing was when I was able to appreciate Bond movies a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And she's definitely got kind of a more serious sort of mission-focused mindset. And I think that was kind of what sealed it. I know there's, in a lot of the Bond movies, there's always jokes that, oh, she's so dry, she's so hyper-focused, she's a bean counter. It's almost kind of interesting because, of course, it's a little bit of a misunderstanding that people don't realize that she's focused on mission success. That's her primary focus. She wants the mission to be successful. And that's why she's so laser-focused, even if it is a little bit sort of dry of her to say, yeah, you know, just focus and do your jobs, guys.
Yeah. But I think another thing they have to start recognizing, too, is that she's supposed to be a foil for Bond, which I believe it was. She started with Brosnan, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
So very, very charming, very quippy, a little more humorous than I would say that Connery is. She has to be serious to be that foil. And then she kind of became more of a conscience to Craig and during the Craig ones. I think she worked out in both very well, which is the same with M with Bernard Lee. All right, so tune in next week where we review For Your Eyes Only. I'm Intelligence Officer Wiz.
And I'm Weapons Specialist Zero.
Talk to you guys next time. Bye.